Dale.
Dale?
Dale's here.
He's here.
But he's the one that couldn't make it.
No, no, Dale's.
He might be in the restroom.
Yeah, but Dave couldn't make it. Dave's not here.
We don't see Dave till sometime like tomorrow after midnight, I'm.
Right?
It's extended. He might be sleeping for a while.
Yeah.
Not mine. Dave filed mine like 3 weeks ago.
You guys want a copy of the ordinance? Yeah, we're gonna go through it.
At least you're doing that. You got a copy?
Yeah.
You should play college to that, well, 10 miles in between softball teams. Did your buddy Chris Montana come with you?
David? She's, his daughter's doing pretty good for Apple Creek.
I think her softball.
Softball. Starting as a freshman. Yeah. No, it's Apple Creek. I think it has a population of about 90 people.
Got a place to find.
See that kid who got shot, he went to the wrong house?
No.
His mother sent him to pick up his two brothers. And she gave him an address.
No.
And the address was like, I forgot, like Avenue and.
Roads?
Yeah, he plugged in the wrong one, it was GPS. They were only like 5 streets apart. Went and knocked on the door. Guy opened the door. And the head killed him.
This was in Cleveland or?
No, it was, no, it was in Cleveland. It was on the news before I came up here, I see you.
Are we ready to continue the meeting?
Yeah.
No.
Everybody here? Yes. Okay, so we, thank you, Ron.
Recording in progress.
Thank you, Ron, for facilitating the tour. Everybody, but, well, it was good. So we had a chance now, everybody can digest that information, what they observed. I think we need to determine what functional requirements with respect to the stakeholders and everyone involved to determine a program of requirements and an operations plan to make sure whatever we come up with, it's consistent with something that'll be good for the next 30, 40 years. And also review the integrity of the existing facility, what portions could be better used, as well as what portions could be repurposed. So we'll do that. I think at some point we'll probably bring in somebody that specializes in developing the functional requirements, a program of requirements. They assess, like the state, they assess the size of rooms, they assess the need, they assess the long-term planning objectives. And at the end of the day, they're able to come up with a program that comes back to the stakeholders, everybody comes together and determines if it meets the criteria as outlined by the people who are actually going to use those facilities in the site. And then at the same time, we can review the cost, do a cost analysis. At the same time, we'll continue to look at our existing facilities and to see how what can be done to repurpose. We'll examine all possibilities. So there's no wrong answer at this point. It's more of a, you know, be open-minded to explore different possibilities. So we'll put that together, and then we'll call a public buildings and lands or a strategic planning or some other vehicle to make sure we get as inclusive as possible with members of council. So if in the meantime, if after the tour you have thoughts that you'd like to share, I encourage you to submit those, and then either to Debbie or to Ron. We'll reach out and ask anyone if they have any thoughts that glaring or a question that needs to be answered for you to do a better analysis. And then you'll be able to assimilate all that information and keep this process moving forward.
Do you want me to see if we can print the analysis that GPE did originally? Is there, you know, Anthony wasn't on and John wasn't on. They should have seen the analysis that GPE gave us.
Hey, Dennis, could you make sure we get the analysis out, send it out electronically to everyone?
The GPE?
Yeah, that way at least at the baseline, they'll have a baseline understanding.
At that time, all the other serials that are down on Brexville Road, that was over there too, so you should see good builder, obviously.
Right. So we'll have, instead of better understanding, a better framework of why this became a priority and our overall analysis of our facilities. That's really what we're doing. I think the strategic planning session, we have 50 things to look at, but we kind of like focused on two and a half, if you include the library. And so those are the issues we're going to stay focused on in order to at least advance the narrative on those issues as defined by city council. So we'll do that.
We asked Chief Butler to provide a prioritized list as it related to the police station. Is it appropriate to ask Ron to have a prioritized list of things so that when we're evaluating, we have a better idea of specific needs?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that'll coincide with our functional requirements analysis. That'll help. And then everybody can weigh in on that.
And in regards to the GPD study, the amazing deficiencies that were identified, was that the water infiltration in that southern wall, and what else?
I don't recall those specifics, but we'll make sure you get a copy of it so that you can review it, and then it'll help you with some of the concerns or issues, so to answer some of those questions. Okay. Thank you. And for those attending, thank you. Okay, let's move on to the discussion of public-private partnership. And the author, Jim, how do you want to proceed? Do you want to talk about it holistically? Everyone get a copy of the, oh, there it is. There it is. Made it really easy.
Sure.
Or you can come up to the table if you'd like, or it doesn't matter, as long as
unless you're going to speak a lot of them. Who's not that big?
Yeah. Oh, screaming. All right.
Everyone knows Amy and Matt in the engineering department. So,
thank you, Amy.
Keeps everybody in control. Matt makes sure that we were seeing that happening.
Right. So, to give a brief update of the public-private partnership, we'll touch on the background, some examples, brief summary, the processes, some of the challenges we're facing, and then maybe the next steps of the program. So first, we'll just touch back for the background real quick. Aim that you can put that slide forward. So the ordinance, which was passed in August of 21, which is up there on the screen, we just want to point out one thing on that ordinance was section 5, and that how we looked at this section 5 was that the city's share, let's say, if it exceeded the mayor's spending authority of $15,000, or anything that might require an assessment would go to council. Anything below that would be determined basically administratively. So that's how we've been running it so far to date.
This section 5 doesn't outline a spending limit. It says each individual public-private partnership shall be set forth by the city administration for consideration by city council and be agreed to by majority consent the city council at a regular meeting of council.
Correct.
So that, I mean, the way that reads, it would be any spending on a
not the way we interpret it. It's not the way council has utilized it. we do make sure we follow the purchasing parameters. And council has a chance, reviews every one of these projects, so.
We've only reviewed one.
That's a major one. Well, before you were on. We do the Aster. The Aster. What's that?
Right.
Yeah. And I think the intent was to streamline the process and not to jam up your council agendas with these.
And how many of these have we actually completed? I know Jim gave us an example of two or three, but those were just examples. Are there statistics?
Yeah, we actually have some spreadsheets.
Yeah, it's important.
So, yeah, so the smaller ones, we weren't going to bombard. That's the way we've been doing it now.
I'm not sure that was the intent of the chief, but it's like the intent project was supposed to be reviewed. That was what was stuck in the past. No, well,
so
that was added by council. It wasn't the original legislation.
The purpose of assisting city residents with the stormwater management, creek maintenance, and sewer maintenance. Believe a lot of them probably was looked at as a neighborhood projects. But what we're finding is a lot of them, a lot of residents that are coming forward are single one-off situations in backyards and whatnot. So that has kind of changed it up somewhat from what I probably believe the main purpose of the ordinance was, looking at some of these from a standpoint of some of the alternative bids in a creek maintenance contract. You probably see
this is a good example right now.
So that one was what the Highland Midland rear yard drainage system. So that would be one. That would be for, I think it's eight properties, is that eight or nine properties?
Yeah, I believe that's nine properties.
Yeah, so you have nine properties. That brings up some other discussion on, and now I'm jumping forward.
Yeah, we'll get back to that, I think, later in the presentation. I believe it was asked about, you know, specific projects that we've received so far. So we're going to go into that a little bit. This is just a brief summary, and then I'll give you a little bit more detail. So far to date, seven projects are completed. One of those projects is the assessment we just mentioned. That was the $15,811 assessment project. The other six were just reimbursements. There are six projects that are currently active, which means that they have completed an application or their project has been reviewed and considered eligible at this point. Then we have an additional 10 that are, we kind of consider them inquiries right now because we are still visiting the site, doing a review, and trying to determine next steps. And just for reference, TPC, total project cost versus city share, we might be mentioning that within some of those numbers.
Which to date was 26,000?
The number you're referencing, seven completed projects for a total of 26,830. So that does include that 15,811 assessment. So out of these seven, This first one is the only assessment. These other six are reimbursements. These are the six active projects that are currently in progress. Some of these are what we consider pretty close. You know, we have an agreement. We're just waiting for the agreement to be signed.
And that the reimbursement is 33% of the total cost of the project?
A maximum of 33%.
We don't know if it was 33% of that.
So far, that's what we've been using. But we do have some thoughts.
Are you able to pull that up so we can see some of the streets? Suspects there with the drainage problems.
So I may be jumping the gun here, but I know that there was a big group of folks from Pebble Creek in last year? Is that one
yes.
of the projects that's being still looked at?
So they just did it on one property or?
If you go back the page, the one Zumba property wasn't part of that. You're down at the other end of the street. But they did come in and I don't know what the status is of that. I think that would be where everyone would have to agree to participate, which is one of the issues too. And there's one, when Amy gets to it, one thing I would like to mention to council, that homeowners association up there in Hawthorne Creek, Hawthorne Trace, I think you remember whoever was on there, we had that tree ordinance. I think council should amend the ordinance and pass that you have any new houses, it has to be 5 years or 10 years before we go do anything, because in my opinion, any water issue should fall on Colton, not on the city. So that might be just something you guys want to consider.
And we do have some challenges.
Right.
We
talked about that.
You know, Brian, you're down to send an email, they're going to go out and visit.
Well, there's that. I mean,
that's not a small one, right?
No.
And this just shows a little bit of the evolution of the process. So in the very, very beginning, you know, we had the ordinance and we were still working to create a process. So we did have 1 to 2 of these that came to us. You know, they're already doing the construction. They wanted the reimbursement and we did the review. Scenario 2 is when we actually were able to meet with the resident to consult about their issue and do a review and give them advice and feedback.
Yeah, and it makes a good point. A lot of these emerged from the fact that council passed legislation. There was discussion and the people saw that. They were reading different publications and they would come to the city expecting some type of support, resolution, or information. A lot of these emanated from council passing legislation and people thinking they were at least exposed to the opportunity to understand their issue. And so a lot of these inquiries have to be analyzed by the engineering department, organized and analyzed by the engineering department before we even can even think about a strategy to resolve a problem. So that takes a lot of time and effort. And I think that's one of the points that Matt was talking about earlier, but I'm sorry, Amy, go ahead.
And now we're in scenario 3, which is our current and preferred scenario. And we are becoming more organized and structured in this. I'll show you a pre-screening application form that we've developed. And we actually developed that form. We developed this form. We actually used the sewer district has a stormwater management program. And we kind of use that as like a starting point for our form. It allows us to, you know, it's an opportunity for the resident to share their issue and all the information they have. And for us to be able to review that, meet them on site, following that with a little bit more information than we previously had.
How does a resident get this form?
So it usually starts, a lot of these come in as a phone call. You know, I have a drainage issue on my yard. Sometimes they might ask about the program. A neighbor told them, or they read it maybe in one of our magazines. And so that's when we let them know that this pre-screening application exists. And then we usually send it via email. If they have email, or they can come pick it up, or we can mail it. And then they complete it and return it to us.
And we're not talking about having a tab on the website where they
can go. We've talked about that too. We don't have it up on the website yet. We kind of wanted to have these meetings first to gather your feedback, but that is what we would like to do.
It all started because we had these discussions about the Midland. And what do we do when we have a variety of stakeholders, and how do we the wagon, so to speak, engage a group, and then we started once we passed legislation, people started making, you know, word of mouth, through inquiries, through the publications, and that's why this process, it's all evolving, and that's why we felt it was important to come back to council and see if how we figure to make it better, how we can fund it, how we can do all these things on a more permanent basis. So that's where we're at, and go ahead, I'm sorry.
And then with this process, we've actually developed this agreement, and this is part of scenario three that we looked at before, that would require, ideally, you know, that the resident would pay the city 50% of their share prior to construction. We, the engineering team, would assist with, you know, the bidding process, or they might have their own contractor, but either way, we would have feedback, and we'd be able to give our expertise on the work, and then following the construction, they would pay the remaining 50%. And then this agreement also releases the city from future claims and future maintenance on the property.
And then the other 50% is due when the project's complete? Mm-hmm.
Within 30 days, yeah.
And we have you've got a summary of the projects we've done already.
Yeah.
So you'll see the numbers aren't significant.
Right.
But the solutions are significant. What we've learned is how we memorialize it, how we're able to have permanent information so that in the down the road, if they sign a release, then we know that we've done what we're supposed to do, and we're not responsible to go back and do something, do more.
And while the projects have not been significant so far, we do anticipate some pretty expensive projects coming our way in the future. So we just want to be prepared for that.
And we document every call, from the calls to the next stage of application to the next stage of engagement. And so there's a series of steps along the way. And we need to know parameters council wants us to work with. And now that we've got a little bit of experience, exposure to the real world application of this program, people are very happy. They have the ability to communicate an issue. We have a vehicle that can organize the different issues, and then we're able to in a position to advance that if they choose to invest in their property. And so we're able to document them so that we don't have additional, we limit our liability or exposure in the future. That's how it's worked. But if you want to continue on.
I'm not following the 50%. So are our residents paying 100% of the cost to the city?
No, so it actually, it'd be 50% of their two-thirds. It is a little confusing to, so we, the city, would cover up to one-third. They would cover two-thirds, let's say. So then they would need to provide to us 50% of that two-thirds.
So the $3,000 issue, you pay $1,000, they owe us $2,000, they put $1,000 when we start, and they pay the other $1,000 when we're completed.
I see where that can run difficulties if we're going to be putting it on their taxes, right?
That's a different where story. We need to get some direction from council.
Because they can't afford to.
We're not going to do anything in excess of my limitation. We're also not going to do anything. We can't do anything that needs to be assessed. That's all kind of be a consummatic
so far residents haven't had the option of assessment?
Numbers have been too small.
No
one's really asked.
I've talked to a few, and most of them would rather just.
How did that one on Pleasant Valley work?
That was almost assessment.
That's an assessment.
That one was the assessment.
That was the person that owned it. So
right. It was, $60,000, if I recall. And so that was an assessed situation. Council authorized, approved it, and on their taxes. So.
And the contractors were picked by us?
Well, we use our maintenance contracts.
That's who.
Or if they have someone, correct, by the way, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah. Go ahead. So we just completed one the other day, last week, which was, we had an alternate bid item to replace some sewer, say, in a easement. And as part of this, doing the work, this property owner wanted to add some yard drains in the backyard that was actually catching water from Pleasant Valley properties. So
That part, we went through, drew up plans and whatnot, and the contractor that the city had, the creek maintenance contractor, performed that work, the extra work outside the easement with all the agreements in place and the gentleman paying me 50%. What we did find is the neighboring property also wanted to install drains. However, they felt that the price was a little high, what the contractor had quoted. And I do see that as another challenge you might face, in that the city bids these out, the contractor has to, they're bidding it at prevailing wage, we all know. So whereas if you just had a landscaper maybe come in and quote that work, it may be cheaper, and some may find it that way, but that's just another challenge you're going to got to work through on everything.
So if we find that, we're not obligated to use the bid process that we've in place and been authorized to. If someone's cheap, we have a $3,000 item, but there's a landscaper or contractor that gives the price for $2,000, we can use that. We have that discretion to do that, as long as the homeowner or the land property owner agrees to it. Oftentimes, they have someone that they're familiar with. The city can improve a property, approve a drain water issue that affects others, like the Pleasant Valley situation. It's not just fix up my yard. It usually has something to do with a greater or a situation that's going to have a larger impact, or it's within our right of way, or it's within our easement. So there's a lot of different extenuating circumstances that play into a decision that we have to go through the process of things.
The one Zumba property, that he picked the landscaper, and the good thing about that, with this release, it's all on him. It was his guy who did the work.
That's what I'm saying. As long as they sign off on what they did, you can't come back.
Sal gave us a receipt for him when we owed $2,000 on the $9,000. On the other one, Sedlak property, we paid nothing. The city, the two homeowners split it. That was down to earth. And on the other one, at Bay Chupa, she was already getting the work done. The neighbor decided to participate with in the city, so we paid down to earth, they paid down to earth, and with all releases, so now there's a problem. A year, 5 years, it's no longer on the city. We, you know, they can call their contractor back.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds good on single family things, but if it's a multiple housing thing like we did on Midland, I would say the city's picking the contractor. But I can see.
Oh,
I can
well,
see.
That would be a
bad things happen.
On the Midland situation, yeah. Where you have 8 or 9 yes. homes, the larger project,
absolutely.
We'll go through our channels.
Yeah.
They'll just all sign off. And if one of them doesn't, we're sitting around this table and we're all part of the process. And Matt says, I'm not signing. Well, I'm not doing the project.
Yeah. And that's one of the challenges we have listed in here is
right.
When these projects are put out to bid. It's assuming everyone buys in. And what happens if you have one property owner that doesn't?
Well, usually we have a discussion with them, and it's built a good neighbor policy. I mean, Matt, would you want to be with all your neighbors and not contribute, especially when there's something that's going to be good for the neighbor, the whole area? Remember, the genesis of this was because of that specific situation, and they're all over the city, too. These aren't confined to one area.
Two questions. Let's say I have some work done with an agreement on my property, and then I turn around within a short period of time and I have a rental property, and I want to go through that. Is there some limitation on an individual on how often they can hit this program? That's the first question. And a related question is, do these need to be residents? What about an LLC?
Well, how do you want us to handle it?
That's what I'm asking, if there are specific parameters.
Help us define the parameters.
Can we set a budget to define the parameters for these funds to fund this? Where are they coming from?
What fund are we coming out of?
We finally, in the last appropriation amendment that was just in process of the last week, we did put some money into the 420 and 430 funds, some of these capital improvement project funds. But seeing that Section 5 that was talked about earlier,
our office, unless I'm interpreting this incorrectly, we can't pay any of these until you guys approve them. And I'm going to have legislation on the May agenda to have you approve the ones that we're paying.
Do you not think it's wise to have it's our own fund for this? I know you don't like tons of funds, but 420 funds appropriate.
Well, I think council should set a budget for this program, and there should be some sort of prioritization of projects. I see someone had water in their front yard, and I think water in their front yard would be very low priority compared to some of the other issues throughout the city. So is it first come, first serve? How are we selecting?
Like I said, people are coming to us, and it's all a new program, so it's not as though we don't have a lot of experience, and we have a lot of expertise. But we're learning. We're trying to come up with forms. We're trying to make it reasonable for our residents. But we'll shut it down. We're going to shut it down and wait till council takes action to give us the authority to move forward.
So we do have. They council wrote it, and if you want a different council, section 2 says the mayor shall establish a program. Now, if you want council to help establish the program, amend the ordinance. You passed this legislation on April 3rd, August 10th, 2021. Mayor established the program.
Well, I'm outlining the program to the staff.
I can't think of the point. You should put a budget together on it so that you're not, you know, all of a sudden having shortfalls, right?
Help it help you?
Yeah, because you don't think it's wise to put this on a
budget for a 5-year capital every year.
It'll be aligned.
Yeah.
We're putting money into it this way, you know. Can you tell us how far we can go?
Well, actually, we manage your expectations.
We've done what the ordinance said. Created a program. Yeah. And we've implemented to see how, and we can outline, and we've outlined some of the challenges. And that's where we're at right now, if you want to keep going on that, because these are the challenges. So.
I have already put in a new line item under the 430 on for any monies that residents pay under the program. And we can put a separate line item under the 430 fund for any expenses. Most of it, I think, is more the 430 because it's more drainage and things like that. Not necessarily, we're not fixing roads or anything like that. So that's why I think it should be under the 430.
Help us, help the administration, help this team of people that have done a great job of taking the ordinance, framing the ordinance, and making it user-friendly for the residents that come to us with questions. Now we need to know how far do you want us to go? I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you want to put a number on it? We already know there's certain caps built into the system. One, I can't spend over $15,000 even if I wanted to. Any assessment, council got to approve it. So these are limiting factors already exposed. So
a while back, I in utilities, Jim, I think I sent you a list that provided prioritization of different projects. In other words, is the water by your foundation? Is the water in near your house? Is the water in the backyard and I can't mow the grass for an extra week? That kind of a thing to enable engineering to evaluate the situation to determine if it's what level of prioritization is based on what the problem is. You know, if it's out in the middle of my back 40 and my yard is 500 feet deep, it's natural. It's going to be a nice place for the water to settle in, even though it's my yard.
We talked about that with the engineer at the time when we sent
right.
it over.
Yes.
What we don't want to continue to do is establish the program. We know it works. What we don't want to be able to do is continue spending engineering time and effort to go through all these things if there's not the volition, the desire by council to get some of these things done or give us some latitude to get them done. Time is money. Every time we have to have engineers or support staff go through this process, we just need to know globally how you want us to handle it. And if council wants to be involved for every $1,000 issue or every $15,000, you got to just give us parameters. We've now done what the ordinance told us to do, go out and put together a program. And now we're here going through this issue, going through the program to help us become more efficient.
Well, did I not hear you say that an early stage in this process is engineering staff takes a look at the situation? Isn't that an appropriate time to do this prioritization that we talked about in utilities?
Yeah, I would think at that time you could establish parameters and prioritize which projects, you know, would make sense that you want to green light first, some yellow light projects, and obviously, you know, the ones that don't make sense, you I don't know if you've already told people about things that don't make sense.
I think their engineering team have done a really nice job of performing that assessment as people have brought their issues to the city. And we documented it all. So there have been a few of them that requests are way beyond our scope. So we prioritize based on not their expectation, but our capacity to manage these things on a timely basis. What I don't want to be doing is having these items here for perpetuity. I mean, some of them, obviously, if it's beyond our capacity.
This is, if you can make project problems go away, this is a good societal, you know, result. So
I think the program, the way you outlined, the way we improved it, as long as you give us the authority to take care of these little things, either give us the authority to keep going forward now that we put it together, we know how it works, we have to tweak the ordinance, and we can move forward with that. If you want to know every time we do something, then I'm not sure that it's really realistic for the administration to, because there's got to be some, maybe what about $1,000 or?
Well, you create a reporting process that if you approve these things under 15, that there's a report issued as to what the project was, what it entailed, just like you did right there. Right. I mean, I think the intent was just to make sure we knew that these things were going forward for the right reasons, and you know that they were going to be in the public purpose. So we debated about this when we first brought up as well. Should it be multiple properties? We said, well, that's the most desirable, but sometimes individual properties also have these issues. And while it's not directly affecting somebody that we know of right now, it could well be, you know. And so we didn't say there was a prohibition against individual properties. We just said that, you know, the priority would be multiple properties first, right?
Sure. If you put a limit, if you cap the amount of money we're going to spend, that's one safeguard. We need some latitude to keep moving forward, because
makes sense.
If we don't have some latitude, then it's like every calling back every month, and it's like, you know, we're trying to run an organization out of the engineering department, so people have high expectations, and we temper them with reality oftentimes, because we just can't solve every water issue in this city.
Well, we saw the projects that were done and proposed. Yeah. None of those were shocking. They were all in neighborhoods where there was issues, right? So, I mean, you're solving problems, that's a positive result.
Well, really, this team we have has done a very nice job of communicating with the residents, receiving information, communicating with them, not promising something that we realistically don't see as something that we could replicate everywhere. You know, my rule of thumb's always been, we can't do it for everybody, we can't do it for anybody. But it just, there's so many requests that, just like every street's not going to be done every year, every sewer's not going to be fixed every year. Sometimes issues take a month to plan, sometimes they take 6 months and a year. Facilities take years to plan, and they're good for decades. So it's a fluid process. Council by this legislation created parameters, and we know the system works now. We know that this works.
So you want some further parameters?
Well, we want to clean up the ordinance. And I think it's fair that we put some money, cap the money, and we create the funds so that, and we have a summary every year to give the council as to everything we did, so that I think those are fair. But to expect us to come back to council every time we're going to do $1,000 or $2,000, that's not realistic.
I think when that was put into the legislation, it wasn't envisioned that they'd be these real projects. It was large projects.
Well, when you have a neighbor dispute, you have situations, and you can resolve them, and they're paying. How often do you ever get people to pay in our city for anything, really, realistically?
that's our problem, how we're used to solve these problems.
Yeah.
Go in there and fix it, and we use the whole stuff.
Suck it up, buttercup, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I think it's a lot, much more sophisticated than it used to be.
Well, or it was put on the list, and the list just kept growing, and it's,
and the list is still there.
Yeah. So I wasn't on council when this was approved, and I just read through it here quickly, and I'm really questioning if we're following the true intent of the way
this is written. That was going to be kind of where I was going next.
Right, let me just read through this. So the second whereas says, the city has resources and tools available to it that can marshal resources on behalf of the community that residents cannot marshal on their own due to purchasing power, expertise, engineering, architectural, sewer, and other public purpose. The fourth whereas says, from time to time, needed projects that affect property and or neighboring property bear a cost that is not affordable by a homeowner who may have the inability to pay all the upfront costs of a project. So when I read those two things and I see these $3,000 projects that people are hiring their own landscapers for, and they live in $600,000-$700,000 homes, does that really meet the intent of this piece of legislation?
But that landscaper's not doing engineering. Right. Sculpture, you know, going above all that stuff. So he's going to dig a trench, he's going to throw some stuff in there, and hope to God it works.
Well, most of these issues came up.
We're giving some more detailed
work information. The city long term by our process, by this process. Well,
can we stop with helping some of these projects with the engineering and let them take on the whole financial burden of the project?
Well, we stop with our
$3,000 or $5,000 or $7,000.
That's where I think we.
If we stop with our expertise, then people will just do what they want to do, and then we'll have a situation that I build up mulch on my property, so the water goes over to your property before it gets with the engineer there. Then we're putting them all on notice that, hey, you know what? We've documented it. You came in and you changed the grade, and we were here. We have some substance to have a discussion instead of through the neighborhoods. They one builds up, another one builds up. Before you know it, last man standing has got a problem. Then they come to the city and expect us to solve it. So, yeah, we I guess the practical application is what's really important here. And we've discovered, and many of you have been exposed to these, like Dale said, get on the list, get on the list. Well, the list never goes anywhere. Now it goes somewhere. And so that's what we're trying to do.
To your point, this is what we're exactly trying to prevent, was people just doing their own thing and not having engineering and not having any type of a thought process outside of get it off my property.
Right, but if they're going to do infrastructure work and put in sewers and drains, they have to pull permits, it has to be inspected, they have to do it by code. So we can assist with the engineering, but if they're financially capable of paying for it, why are we subsidizing them?
You know, sounds good. That sounds
not how it works.
Right.
It's
just the reality of it.
Well, it sounded like with one project, they were already doing it, and then we participated 33%.
You know, you can drill down in any specific situation, but the bottom line is if we don't get involved with our engineering and group, our people, then the people just do that, and the next one comes, neighbor comes by, and they do it. And before there's, it's just, we get the call when the people on Sycamore Court have now have six houses that have built up their backyards because people, you know, well, police every situation, people are working on their houses. It's just not what we do.
And really, so it happened.
No, so what we try to do is resolve issues, give information, educate people. You know, people think, some people think water goes uphill. But so, by at least by our group going out there, explain it to them, Matt goes out. We have a situation on Stone Road right now. They want the city to take care of this whole drain water problem. Well, look at
that. And that yard's a swamp to begin with.
It's a swamp to begin with. So yeah. We use our education, our expertise, and our knowledge to educate them, but they don't want to hear it necessarily.
Well, the other thing, when we first proposed the ordinance, there was a you know, value of your home. So we would go into properties where the value of the home was kind of like $250,000 or less. We would put like a sliding scale, and that was removed after some debate that we thought that, you know, these water problems don't necessarily, they don't affect wealthy
homes as well as smaller homes, you know, differently. They affect them pretty much the same. So that had been discussed and was removed at the time.
Well, I see on the challenges versus stream bank stabilization projects. And the folks from Braywood who were in a year and a half ago where that creek behind their house has washed away footage of their property because it comes through like a river?
They couldn't agree on all of them getting together, so none of them are doing it. And it's still getting washed away, and that bridge is going to be washed out pretty soon. And because not all five or six of them could agree, they wouldn't do it.
Same thing with the King's Cut.
Yep.
I mean, same thing with any of those major streams. It's at one calls and says, I want you to do this. Well, you can't put gabions on your property, and then not the next one. Everybody would come in and we'd sort it out. If we could solve a global issue by a strategy such as this ordinance, great. But I think that's where we rely on the engineer understand to go out and determine this is realistic. We have a guy with a lot that wants that's going to build a house. And, hey, fix my creek. It's not realistic. He has capacity. Look, if you come in for your permit, we will assess your engineering drawings to determine if they're realistic and the location of the gabions you want to put in or the right location. Those are the experts. That's what our engineering group does. But to suggest that we're going to put that as part of this program, it's not realistic. So there's a lot of, so what we're trying to say is that I think it's evolved, it's mature enough now till we're back at the table saying, here's some of the issues. If you want to lock in certain change, modify the ordinance, that's fine. And within certain parameters, that's fine. And we'll just go move forward from there.
Do you want to go through what these issues are?
Sure. Equitas challenges slide is in here twice. This one is mostly to just focus on the neighborhood projects. I know from listening to minutes from when this ordinance was created, it seemed like that was a priority. So again, an example of that is that Highland Midland project. And so that project would be a $61,000 project. That's what it was bid out at.
So that was for the whole, every one of those?
Those, yeah. Center circle, yeah. Drainage.
That's not that bad.
Divided by nine. So the city would contribute a total of $20,420. Each of the nine houses would contribute $4,500 roughly. So then that would mean the city would, you know, roughly $2,300 for a house.
These are opportunities that we're not going to solve on a global basis without this ordinance and without the buy-in from all the residents. So
the question on that would be again is if someone didn't, and or if some people wanted to pay up front and some wanted to be assessed, and that be done, and just little things like that.
I think the city would be flexible on that if somebody was in a hardship situation or just
you've got the authority.
It would all be documented. It's,
well, if one person doesn't want to do it, that's the only thing. I was like, you know, that's not how this is written. So we force them?
You know, if it's just one, you know, but we've been very fortunate. Most of the things that we've done try to defuse neighbor disputes, defuse situations that we try to bring everybody to the table. And most of the time, we've been successful in having them pay. And so I think the fact that we're engaged in term rights. But the fact that you allow the engineering group to at least assess it, you're protecting us too. If there's a drain water issue, we all know where they're at. But if we're able to monitor them and take that information and track it, I think that there's we're better off as a community. And we safeguard ourselves from potential liability down the road. But it's a good program. So, Amy, you want to continue this?
Yes, I'm near the end here. So just getting back to those challenges, I think eligibility is something we, you know, a lot of these are issues that people have come to our office to inquire about, you know, HOA participation, pond erosion, stream bank stabilization, as we talked about, slope stability, projects affecting one property versus those neighborhood properties, vacant lot, can someone come to us before they've started building? Should there be any type of like parameter, like you need to live in your home for so long, there needs to be a home, a structure? We have heard from residents asking these questions and wanting to participate in the program in these situations, rental properties.
Maybe real quick, that lot on Stone Road, which has been a slump, like Dale said, for forever. That meant these people, if they find out about them, they're going to try to get the city to do something for them. And it's, the city shouldn't touch that. I mean, it's been wet down there forever. We have responsibility to guide them to what they can do, but there's no obligation for us to do it. In other words, if they try to do something on the wetlands, that's going to be create a bigger issue for them. And
that's already started to take place.
Yeah, well, that's why we put them on notice, too.
Mm-hmm. That's a big question about rental properties, too. But if the owner comes to us of the property, shouldn't they be treated just like anybody else?
Depends on the situation.
I would say no.
Unless you're a resident,
unless you have a rental
in the city. What if you lived in a city and you had a rental in the city?
So the rental property is a business. I mean, it's a money-making proposition for that person. So it's their own.
Well, that's true, because that's what I had to do on my property. I had to put a drainage system in when I put the addition on the garage on that property on Brookside.
Yeah, the city outlined what the parameters
they
were.
They said it's what you need to do.
That's
what we did.
Right, so for use our expertise, that's fine, because it's good for the neighborhood. If you'd have just done something and just put it in without the engineer suggesting, then the neighbor gets flooded. It creates chaos for the administration to have to deal with all these things. So by doing exactly what you did, it's good for you, it's good for the neighbors, it's good for everybody. But we need some parameters. We need to understand, just like Amy said, so we have, go ahead, we'll finish it.
Well, and then determining the share of the city, this is a little bit next steps, and I'll kind of try to get through these next slides quickly. But some examples we were thinking, you know, we did have one application recently sent to us. They already, you know, they had the application completed, they had an estimate, they had photos, they had a lot of information on the front end that didn't require a lot of our resources. So we thought that might be a really good example of us covering the full one third. But maybe if you have a property that we have to put a lot of time and resources, should they still get that same percentage? And we're just thoughtful. We're trying to think through some of the ways to determine.
It's just up to one third, doesn't it?
Up to one third. So, and then another example could be the assessment. I think that was less than a third. I can't remember the exact percentage, maybe like 20%. But, you know, if it's an assessment, if it's a really, it's a higher cost, should that be taken into consideration? So at some point, some sort of maybe scale or some way to determine why one property might have a third and another property might have less than that.
Well, but you may, the engineer department is putting in hours on end on one project. A third is, we shouldn't be paying a third. You have to take into consideration what we're paying our employee to.
When we do have some people inquiring, they have water in the yard, they have no idea why. So we have to go out there and start from scratch.
We have more work than we have.
So we have to determine a plan. We have to create a plan for them sometimes. We're really putting a lot of work in front of it.
These are things people can't do on their own.
Right. So I guess it's just a question of determining if that should affect the city's share. That goes with budget consideration, too.
Let me move on. Sorry. Yeah. I just want to make sure we touch base so everyone's like the slope stability, landslide, stream bank erosion projects, things like that. So far, the cost of what we've been doing, I think the average was like $5,000 or whatnot. It might be on one of the slides. But without having parameters set. Issues of slope stability and whatnot, we all probably know are going to be not 5,000, but 50, 100, 150 plus. So with a budget, you know, one project like that could erase that budget for the year, whatever it may be. So just something to note. And also would be, if you did do something for the slope stability and whatnot, and you were to assess it in 15, 30 years, I can just say that Mother Nature, no matter how good its engineer, sometimes will win. And if that fails before the 30 years or whatever it is, and you still live there, wouldn't you want it redone or sure, whatever, man, yeah, no matter what. So just items like that that might be considered.
I think those are exactly the things we kind of intended this for, though, too. I mean, it's like just things that people aren't going to do on their own. They just let them go, and look what happens. You know, then you got problems in multiple areas. So it's like, yeah, if you bring them to council, can we go over our budget? We go over our budget all the time, every year, right? So, I mean, if it's something that's worthy, we should consider it now. Or we say, no, we're going to do it next year or 2 years from now, whatever. But, I mean, that's part of your five-year plan thing. I mean, like, let's plan these things out so that these are problems. And if we can solve these problems over time remedial, I think it's important to do that.
And speaking of slope stability, has anybody here at the table seen the pictures of the Taban property on the Lower Brookside Road?
I think everybody's been out there one time or another.
They're on Friday.
Right?
Yeah. We basically told an engineering group that's Lower Brookside. Next to Super.
Oh, is that
Yeah. So we're basically, they need to come in with a process. They can have an engineer tell us how they're going to stabilize that. We can monitor before they do anything with the house. I don't know if they got it over their head, what the circumstance was, but we are going to just monitor the situation. He has to come in and tell us how he's going to resolve that slope, slippery slope, so to speak. And the impact on the neighbors.
And did they do some demolition work in the back that caused the slide?
They took a wall, retaining wall down between the property, the patio partially out. But Matt and Don are making them do what? Is it geotech?
They have get a proposal for a geotech report. So right now he's supposed to be in the process of doing some soil borings before, and then we can review the report. See what the next step would be.
Knocking down.
Correct.
I don't know.
But we're not going to do that. He did knock. It was a retaining wall, like almost a walk out into the hillside, and the retaining wall was collapsing, or, you know, in danger of collapse, and there was runners there, I guess, with small children. They need her at that time. And then he must have pushed it over. I can't say for sure if he let it go. But
anyway, he's in the process of having to come back with some type of a geotechnical engineering study to convince the city that it's appropriate, his solution's appropriate for that area.
And did he get a variance to the steep slope residential permit process?
He doesn't have any permits from the city.
He wants to do an addition, but everything's on hold because of what is going on there. On the other side,
everybody would say no to that.
Well, somebody didn't get very close to it first.
Okay, the same guy who's building the house on Kingsville.
He built.
We saw it up the street from there. Built the house.
Yeah.
A new one on the south side.
Yeah. There's another area that shouldn't have been built on, but
he's building a house next to.
That's what
Dominic Gingelli. Dominic Gingelli.
Yes, it was
across the street.
Across the street.
So anyway, that's what to answer that question. That's city hasn't given him any approvals. He is now, because of the circumstances, he's in, he has to support and give us information so that we can then review it and confirm that his report meets the minimum criteria for a geotechnical to make sure that he stabilizes the ground.
And are the neighboring properties compromised at all through this?
Today,
And Sue, I talked to Sue 3 years ago, 2 years ago, a year ago, and last week. And she's very concerned, as she should be, in terms of her property. But the entire area is weak. Her property, that property, it's very weak. And it's got instability in terms of the soil. It's got moisture, excessive moisture issues. When I looked at her property 3 years ago, her deck was slowly moving. It's unstable. So you know, she's got to take steps to fix her own property. But now this situation, the neighboring property, creates more of a awareness. So
there's probably a dozen houses on that side that have very similar problems. I think you're going to go
both sides. Both sides.
Yeah.
You go down the hill and come up.
Yeah, side.
The same situation they have with the people on Bramley. So well, we can only do so much, but identifying the situation is our first priority. Safety is our first priority. But in this case, that owner has to present something to the city that makes some sense. So that's where we're at.
And those are houses that around 50, 60,
oh, yeah.
7 years. That's why I'm telling you this, that new section, there's a lot of creeks that run through that property that we're getting calls already. So I wish you would pass something that over 10 years or over 15 years, because the homeowner's guy's already calling you.
Couple of those houses that were moved from Rockside when we changed that Rockside Road to commercial district.
But people have found ways to build on all these properties over the decades. So, but Matt and Amy, what else do you have?
So we already kind of talked about budget consideration, and we just think that tightening up this process and getting some clarity about eligibility will help us with our, you know, resources too in our office.
You're ready to go to the next slide. If council's not amenable to rental properties, it does say that Island Midland project with 9 properties, do we need engineering to look and see are these all owner occupied or any of them owned by landlords? And then what do we do if one or two are tenants? Are we not going to contribute to their properties then?
Well, that's all for council to digest, because we bring it to your attention. We framed it up. We have something that I think this ordinance, the framework is good. We just have to, we're here because administration is saying, hey, here's what we've discovered during this process. And so we need your help now to guide us how you want us to go forward. But taking no action won't work, because then we have to tell people that you're not in a position to move forward. Or if you want to rescind the ordinance, if you're not comfortable with it, that's your prerogative. We just need you to take a step to give us some direction.
So the 33% financial participation plan, if you read the ordinance, it says it is suggested that not more than 33% of the overall direct cost of the project may be borne by the city. So it is not limited at 33%, and is merely suggested.
I think what they meant was the engineering costs and that type of thing, that those would not be part of the 33%. That may not be how it reads, but that's what the intent was.
But if someone doesn't like the ordinance, or they don't want to support the ordinance, then now is your chance to help us, give us direction, because ultimately you have to vote on this. So. But it's our obligation to bring it to your attention to help facilitate this. You see that there's a request, number of requests, engineering groups out trying to at least explain to residents what we're dealing with. And so far it's been well received. And I don't think anyone's abused the situation at this point. So the parameters we establish are reasonable. We just need to know some details. Obviously, we need to clarify a few things and change a few things. We can add language in terms of funding and where the money's going to go for anybody to support that has to reimburse. We haven't had any problem with people reimbursing at this point. So that's not a, the 50% down and the 50% upon completion. It's been very, it's been interactive and reasonable.
Well, I'll start. I think it's a helpful ordinance. But I think, you know, there's definitely a utilities meeting that needs to be had. And
yeah,
there's a lot, with all these challenges that we didn't know going into it, there's a lot of things that need to be addressed at this point moving forward.
I do want to put together some thoughts based on this conversation and others as to, you know, what an amendment to this could look like. And then maybe we go all go through it and pick it apart and see what, sure, what works.
Like on the engineering aspect, I mean, I'd like to see it, you know, a dollar figure. You know, I'm just throwing over out there, but say there's $500 worth of engineering done work, you know, that automatically comes off of our one third that we would pay.
Or gets added to the cost.
Right, right. So.
Or we can add an engineering line item, but to try to count for every hour that we're spending on something, it really is.
But
there's still, because there's so many overlapping.
Could be a percentage of the total cost,
yeah,
from the contractor.
But that's what, yeah, professional, yeah, for-profit engineering firms do. They account for every cost,
yeah,
and they've got software that, that, I mean, that's how you run an engineering center.
Sure.
So I think ours should be able to do that.
But
sure,
you can't eat up, I mean, this is, no, this is one little
engineering,
our engineering.
Yes, I mean.
Per job, you can figure out the cost.
Yeah, engineering firms.
Yeah.
They're just working out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, right. We're not, we don't charge for every call that we receive, so you're going to find some common sense balance to all this. But we need direction. And I would say if the chairman of the utility committee wants to take a stab at tweaking the ordinance, that's fine.
Okay.
We'd appreciate it because we're sitting here fielding all these calls and we'd like to have some direction to be able to expedite some of these. If they're green, we can look forward. If they're yellow, we have to review. And if they're red, they're not going to get out of the gate. And so we don't want to give people false hope that we're able to do something when in fact it's not reasonable. We're not going to put gavions on a vacant lot that people are going to build a house on. It's just so reasonable. I'll be a red.
Okay.
But if you could do that, we'd appreciate it.
Happily.
And it's got a couple things we need to change in anyway, because the small items, we're not going to be running back and forth every time there's a,
yeah,
every time.
Plus, cameras on that.
Yeah.
Anything over a $15,000 full cost comes to council to,
yeah,
review. Anything else, discussion with the mayor.
Yeah.
So understood. Yeah.
That makes sense.
That does make sense.
But it works. But so to your credit, the idea, the concept, and the communication, I think we've done a really nice job communicating with the residents, a lot of residents of the, that just to give them, they just, a lot of them just want to understand what their options are. And so it's become a very popular method of communicating with residents and not promising something we can't deliver on. So
at one time we had 120 to 140 of these projects, you know, so you can expect people to be asking accepted questions, and these are not city responsibilities, these are individual responsibilities, but you know, they just go because no, they don't want, they can't afford them, or they don't know what to do. I mean, I don't know who I would hire as an architectural firm to build this stuff or whatever engineering, and it's, you know, it's not my job, right?
And there's always going to be the person who tries to bump the system, so you just got to watch out for them.
You can't have taken out a permit and then violated your own permit and then asked for money out of the answer.
But we get all kinds. It's fascinating.
So what were the number? We did a couple of these in 21?
Yes. And so we, well, actually, 22.
None in 21. We really haven't advertised it, but it's spreading. It's
right.
Just more word of mouth.
It's time of year.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's like
we're
trying to
everybody. We're
getting some drainage calls.
Everybody wants us to come out right now.
So is it manageable the way we have it? People are, I guess, has this program created more calls to the engineering department? Or if someone's calling for water, I mean, we would have gotten those calls anyways.
Well, in the past, they would have called the service department. the service would have engaged engineering or had some hybrid of that discussion.
Yeah.
Because service department's going to go out and solve the problem, you know, clean out a ditch, low manhole cover, fix it up, do this. Engineering will critique that, take that one step further and critique that and apply the engineering principles to it to see if there's it's what's reasonable and what you're trying to accomplish. But at the end of the day, it's solving residents' problems or at least answering their questions. And we don't solve most problems. We just answer a lot of their questions. At least they understand that we addressed the issue for them. So it's been very well received, the program. So if you could have something, maybe if we got to meet you until you have something for next meeting, if you want to move something, if not, we'll just hold off until we...
Well, this is the time we got to put all these issues. So
yeah, there's some time. And it takes time to solve the issue, so it's not like cookie cutter where we just have your answer tomorrow.
Well, I think it's not all black and white, right?
Right. The things you need. So we appreciate that. If you could... get something so that
I can make some proposals.
Put it on the agenda for next month.
That'd just be great. Basically, we'll be talking about it today. So,
yeah. Anything else, Amy?
I think we basically covered it. I mean, all this bottom line is here. I mean, this just talks about that we really would like to prioritize these projects.
Yep.
And these so far, it's just been these small projects. But if we covered all of these small projects, it's $115,000. So, you know, some of these other projects that were on the challenge side could really affect that number. We start doing those types of projects.
We put together a budget, and then we've got a budget number to work with. And then anything that's over the cap, you bring to council. They find a plan.
I'll bring it anyway.
And then, like I said, put together a plan so that at least there's a satisfaction. Like, well, in 2 years, I might get money. Okay. So you treat this just like any other project, right?
Yeah.
I think that covered a lot of our next steps. Questions that we have.
Sweet stuff. There it
is. Any other questions on the home improvement assessment public-private partnership update? We have a direction. If you need support at all during your...
I'll circulate a grant for you to see if you think it's fair enough.
We share it, we'll review it, and we'll make sure that we get to them. That's great. But thank you. Okay, next steps with aggregation is...
I just have to from the outlook.
Okay. Thank you, Amy. Nice job, Matt. Thank you very much. Nice job. Appreciate some comprehensive information. Thank you for using your connection to get all this other information.
Okay. But that's okay. Yeah, and I'll just continue to send them.
Yeah.
Okay.
We want to, before we just adjourn, we'd like to just update how this gets and next steps with aggregation. Maybe you can share your research and
yes.
Where we're at and so that we can.
I think it's been confusing because the February ordinance was, I think we. City thought was to give NOPEC advance notice that we would like to not renew, but they would be willing, they would be invited to bid as we move forward. When the February ordinance passed, though, NOPEC took that as, oh, you're leaving, so we're not going to contact your residents. And so Greg O'Brien, in his dealings with the attorneys for NOPEC, they said, no, you have to rescind that in March. So that's why it was rescinded in March, so that, I apologize for that, so that our residents would be contacted after they were certified. NOPEC never lost their certification. They just had a gap until the PUCO said, yes, okay, they kind of put them on hold for 3 months because of what they did. So now everyone, and I know Community Services, Emily and Jen have been getting a lot of phone calls and letters. And so what's happened is NOPEC has said to all the residents, okay, if you don't do anything, you're automatically going back to NOPEC. And they have guaranteed a 6 month rate of 6.42 cents from June until December. First Energy, if someone chooses to opt out, they will automatically stay with First Energy, which has already published that their rates will be 10.42 cents per kilowatt hour. So obviously it's a better rate. residents don't have to stay with NOPAM, though. If they want to go on apples and apples, or they just want to change or something, they can still do that. That's completely up to them. But the 6.42 cents right now for a guarantee of 6 months is a pretty good rate. If they choose to opt out and not want to stay with First Energy and go shopping, then there's extra work on the residents. They actually have to then call First Energy and say, oh, wait, I have found this on Apples to Apples, and there's a few extra steps on this. So I think most of the people from my conversations with Emily and Jen are choosing the option of, okay, great, I don't have to do anything, I'm rolling back, I'm getting the 6.42 cents. Here's the other variable. Once they roll back in June, they only have to stay with NOPEC and the standard rate, that 6.42 cents, for 1 month. If they want to get out, if they want to switch to one of the other tiers plans that they have, they can do that. But the 6.42 seems to be the best rate. As far as for the city, going back to the ordinance, so we're back to where we were pre-February 14th council meeting. From everything that I've talked to a number of cities, a number of sustainability people, and also a couple of the brokers, and the city was already in the position. We had already passed legislation in 2000 to be an aggregator. However, we did not, at that time, what we did is we put it on the ballot, it passed by a majority, great, everything easy peasy. The next step would have been to go to the PUCO and apply for certification. I don't know the whole backstory since I was not here, but it appears to me that we did not do that because we decided we were going to go with NOPIC. They had certification, so we're just going to hitch our wagon to their certification. So NOPIC came in, they took care of everything, and that's fine. So at this position, if we want to explore looking for another aggregator or being our own aggregator, it's relatively simple. We have to, we went to the voters, we did that. We would have to find a certified electricity broker who would represent the city, and then they would take care of making sure that we filed everything with the PUCO so that we were certified. And the application's pretty routine, and it's every 2 years, and I think it's like a $200 fee for that. But they would also write the RFPs to make sure the language was exactly what we wanted it to be. No fees, no, you know, early penalties, that whatever. It's such a complicated, I think, from when NOPEC started to what it is now. When I've talked to Broadview Heights, I've talked to Shaker Heights. Shaker Heights has been doing their own natural gas for about 17 years. But they also have their attorney is an environmental, his specialty is environmental law. So at this point, it seems if we want to take the next step to be aggregators, I would think that we'd like to bring somebody in or maybe two different brokers in to kind of explain, here's how it's going to work. Because everyone I've talked to said the way when it started, NOPEC in 2000 was one thing. But it's kind of evolved over time, and there are many more people in the market now. And so really to kind of get updated on how that process works. So the legislation, what happened now is we are still in NOPEC. We never got out of it. We are in it through next June, so we have time on that. We thought we were doing them, you know, giving them advance notice when we passed in February, and they took it a different way. So I would say from my conversations with everyone, and I think too, so that I can't answer all the questions, I think I've kind of done a lot of the research, is to have some brokers come in. TPI had contacted the city, and I made a call out to them. They're a wholesale broker. They represent the Browns, they represent the Catholic Diocese, they do nonprofits, they do a lot of different groups. They could come in, and in my initial conversations with them, their attorneys they're specialists in this, and they know this is how the language should be to protect the city. This is what you should do, because they would also be the negotiators. This is nothing leaving Greg O'Brien out of this, but this then gives it all to a broker. Everything's transparent, what their fees are, how it's tabulated. I don't have any of those specifics. But they could say, this is how it's going to work. It's every 2 years for electricity. It's every 3 years for gas. They do both, but I think you have to have, there are no brokers that do both gas and electricity, because it's just
Greg O'Brien had said that, you know, he would have to, you know, he wouldn't be able to
him when he would reach out to someone in his firm and specifically done aggregation of that. So it's a special.
They'd be an aggregator then? They'd be our aggregator?
They would be, we would work with them. We would get our certification just because that just needs to be, you know, .bi plus the team, we have that done. But then we could work with TBI or if there's some other, you know, if you're familiar, I know, in Columbus or others that do this. Everyone has a different thing. I think the thing, a different kind of specialty, I think in my conversation with TPI, and it was just brief to try to get some background information, because they're wholesalers, they're cutting out a whole level of cost. So that could be a guaranteed savings to the city. But it's a process that we have to start because we have to then, if we chose to go with them or we choose to go with another broker, whoever the broker is, they would be responsible because it is a specialty, as Brian told us, to make sure we go to the PUCO, we do all the paperwork for that. We get our city certification, and then they would work with the city to say, what is it you want? You know, no fees, no, it's an opt-out. You don't get penalized if you want to go in, you don't get penalized if you want to get out. And they know all the little nooks and crannies that their other clients have presented or had questions about that we may not have thought of. So,
Jim, would they come out to a meeting?
Yes.
And Jim's meeting? Jim, do you have anybody else?
We could.
I just want to look first. Let's learn first. So
I would get to at least talk to two different brokers. I like the presentation that they had sent, and I like how candid they were about, we take care of it, you tell us what you want. It's not a one-size-fits-all. The fact that they do nonprofits, the diocese, sports, Sherwin-Williams, they do a lot of big companies, so.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people out there doing this, and there is more than what they were in 2000, which is
right. Okay.
But also with NOPEC, you also have the size helps them negotiate very good deals, so.
And
talk to all of them and then see what their approach is.
And everyone, even though the communities that aren't with NOPEC now, like Shaker Heights, they said, I would still invite them to bid because it's a whole, the game has changed. I should call it a game, but the whole metabolism has changed.
Specifically, on Jim's point about size and NOPEC, we had, you know, it was approached by one mayor, we were in on the meeting, they had a pool of 20,000 versus NOPEC's pool of 500,000.
Let's get some cost that these little guys don't have.
There's no better
than that. Yeah, I mean, they advertise on TV for the Super Bowl, so they're spending some money. Little guys aren't spending money.
We've also got like 200 some odd communities too. So
TPI and NOPEC. Let's invite them for a choice committee.
Give me a couple of those and I'll be happy to
say. Yeah,
absolutely.
I just wanted two things. Thank you, Alan, for taking your arms around this thing and organizing it so that we're in good standing with NOPEC. We're also protecting our residents. At least exposing the situation to so that we can make good decisions or at least options for our residents and business community. So if you could follow up on that, coordinate a meeting with the utilities and then keep the ball in the air at least. And we're not under time pressure today, so.
No, and we because the contract runs until June of next year, and we have to give them 6 months' notice. So we have until the end of the year.
This is good.
This is when they're going out. So this is good.
Right,
and that's when we'll know what after the 6 month rate of 6.42 cents, what it would change to.
I thought that was December, end of December of
2020. Exactly, end of December is the 6.42.
The actual what?
Expires, correct.
Right.
So by then we'd have to know what their rate is in January. And in January it's going to go to a monthly variable as opposed to it used to be on a quarterly variable, unless someone changes to one of their other tiers.
Right.
So.
One other thing that might make some sense of, obviously the mayor's call on Friday night, you went through some of this, but we might want to send a special postcard or something out to the community. Just so that people understand the difference. I mean, it is a confusing thing, but like, and not just put it in the newsletter and just like have a special, hey, you need to read this type thing, you know what I mean? It's an important communication.
Absolutely.
We'll get that meeting and we can do something like that.
We can do that. Now, what we have coming up, which kind of lines up with everybody, if we're rolling back in June. So we put it into the SWIP reach, we put it in the admin, it'll be in the May post again. But tomorrow, NOPIC is actually doing these virtual meetings, so Emily at the community center, she sent a blast out to everybody saying, you can come and watch it in the kiddo room, I think. And it'll just be a presentation, we'll record it, we'll put it on the website. It's the NOPIC presentation, but it'll be that. But then we have, in June, Emily and her team has put together a PUCO meeting on June 14th that's open to anybody. And this is basically, they're going to come in, not pro or anti-NOPIC, they're just saying, here's how you read your bill. Everybody gets a bill from First Energy because they're the default supplier. So they're going, wait a minute, why? I'm still getting First Energy. Even after June, I'll still be getting First Energy or Dominion for gas. The other thing, too, I just want to acknowledge all those communities that I talked to were incredibly generous in sharing their experience. Seven Hills, Broadview Heights, Shaker Heights, I'm sure there's some others that I've forgotten about, but just kind of everyone has a little bit different experience. Shaker Heights just will start in June. They decided they wanted to go be their own green electricity provider. So they went that route. So that was just their own. They just decided it's time now to do that because in a few years it's going to catch up with us. But everybody's been really generous in explaining what their residents go through, what they, the kind of questions they've been getting.
Well, thank you for now putting your arms around it, communicating it to the public, and I appreciate
absolutely.
It.
Just let me know.
And then coordinate with Jim for the utility committee meeting. We'll get a couple people in that they can educate us.
Absolutely.
And aside from Shaker Heights, are there other communities that do their own aggregation?
Yeah, Shaker Heights does. They've been doing their gas since about 16 or 17 years, and they said about 98% participated. And now they're starting their own electricity, but it's going to be wind energy. They wanted to go completely green, so that's what their move is in June. It'll be effective in June. They postponed the
move. Advertise now to get businesses to come to Independence. They want to have stable electricity.
The cost is so here going.
It's going to cost more.
No green, you got no green.
Westlake hasn't, yeah.
It's going to cost more money.
And they went back.
Yeah, it's going
to cost. But a lot of people, it's a lot of it is because they, the majority of the communities I talked to, they said what all their residents want are predictability. We just want to know every month I'm going to pay this. And some will choose a 12-month fixed rate or a 24-month fixed rate. Some of it is just luck and timing. When they went to market for their gas, I think they were at a 4-cent rate. They said it was just, when they bought it, it just happened to be really low. So their residents really benefited. But that's just timing of when you go out to market.
Gas is going to go down too. Because they didn't have any use this winter.
Yeah. Charlie, you just mentioned Shaker Heights. I didn't hear you mention any others. That was the
Shaker Heights has done their own. Broadview Heights had stepped out shortly. And
right, I heard that.
Right, but the finance director I talked to on Blankion's name, David, I think, he was going to call me back. He was there the whole time they've only been NOPIC. There's another, Fremont, which is outside of Toledo, and they're using Buckeye Energy, which I think is around here. I think it's in Solon or Hudson. So some more of these communities are starting to do that, but it really is something we have to just, I think, talk to these aggregators and figure out, because I do think everyone, all the communities have said, it's just change. When NOPEX was originally set up, it was set up a specific way, and now they're, I can't remember the city mentioned it, but they said, you know, now sure, you can apply for a NOPEX grant, but a lot of cities don't have people who have grants, and so that money is kind of left on the table. So they're saying, well, why don't you just give that as a refund to the residents? Again, it depends on what any specific city would be interested in.
Campbell, Ohio, those are the municipal power people, and they have their own aggregators as well.
Ah, so okay.
They're a little smaller, mostly like in Northwest Ohio and Southeast Ohio, but they may be somebody you want to talk to as well.
Okay.
They work with the city. They work with
it. Oh, I'll have to see that. If anyone has any other names, please send them along.
Where are the cities that you know? Well, I've been doing this for a while. So if you can remember these by handful, these are the five cities. But there's not really any to see how they have to
come to a kind of wide door in Boston.
Almost all of the green energy is
That's a good idea.
All my goodness.
Yeah. I think the green strategy is nuclear, that's pretty stable.
Pretty stable.
Yeah.
Okay. Anita, well, you've got a lot of work cut out.
I know, so.
So what's your, I appreciate you. Appreciate you willing to speak to tackle these issues and to advance them, so that's great.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything else, is there?
Well, motion to adjourn.
Debbie. I have motion to adjourn, Deb.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Meeting's adjourned, thank you.
Recording stopped.